I'm Nick Tricarci, a partner at KPMG, and there is a lot of complexity and technical jargon out there when it comes to talking about accounting. My goal is to cut through all of that noise and explain things in plain English in this new podcast series that we're calling By Analogy. The name is a play on a phrase that we love to use in the accounting profession, as we often analogize to different accounting standards. However, we will not be making analogies to obscure accounting pronouncements from yesteryear, but rather to things that we all encounter in our day-to-day lives. The idea is to explain a rather mundane subject matter, if I'm being honest, in a more entertaining, relatable, and memorable way. And if you have an idea for an analogy, or if you want us to cover a specific topic on our show, please shoot me a note. My email is included in the episode description. On this episode, we're talking about preferred stock. Now, obviously, everyone's familiar with common stock. That's what we see when we log into our brokerage accounts and pray that the value has gone up. It's also what our crazy uncle is talking about at the holidays when they say they've got a hot stock tip for us. But what about preferred stock? Well, if you watch Shark Tank, like me, it's what the contestant is referring to when they say they've previously done a Series A round of financing. You know, it's the part right before Mr. Wonderful shreds their valuation to pieces. But what is preferred stock exactly? Well, that can be a tricky question to answer because it has shades of common stock. I mean, after all, it represents ownership of a company, but it also has a lot of shades of debt. You know, usually it comes with a fixed dividend that operates a lot like interest. And oftentimes preferred stockholders can redeem their shares for cash, kind of like how a lender gets repaid for a loan. Plus, preferred stock can come with all kinds of features that blur the lines between debt and equity. For example, conversion options that allow the investor to trade it in for common shares. So the answer to the question of what is preferred stock often lies in the infamous gray area. It's really a hybrid, and hybrid instruments are extremely complex from an accounting standpoint. At a high level, first you need to answer the question that I have very intentionally skirted so far. Is it more like debt or is it more like equity? That answer is then going to lead you down the treacherous path of figuring out whether any of these special features, things like dividends, or redemptions or conversions, are actually derivatives that need to be accounted for separately. And I apologize for using the D word there. Don't worry, I'll be making a donation to my swear jar, which is actually quickly filling up. But once you get past that, then you've got to figure out where to put it on the balance sheet. And preferred stock is unique in that it could end up in any section on the quote, right side of the balance sheet, as people like to say. Which, by the way, that saying doesn't really make any sense when you picture a typical balance sheet, right? Maybe we should be saying at the bottom of the balance sheet instead. The point is, it could either be in the liability section, the permanent equity section, or even that weird mezzanine section that we call temporary equity. And by the way, figuring out where to put it on the balance sheet requires an entirely different analysis than when you're assessing whether it's more like debt or equity for purposes of identifying, sorry again, derivatives. And that's not even scratching the surface, to be honest, of the accounting complexities that potentially come with preferred stock. You know, in my experience, the best way to simplify the accounting for preferred stock is by really understanding the economics. And by that, I mean understanding, you know, what did the investor think they were buying? How can they get their money back? And what types of returns can they potentially generate on their investment? Now, I know that's easier said than done, because if you've ever read one of these agreements, you know it is shrouded in legalese. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk about it today. To explain how preferred stock works in plain English so that the economics and therefore the accounting are easier to understand. Well, that and because we get a ton of accounting questions on preferred stock, and we're starting to see public companies use it more and more as an alternative means of financing given the high interest rate environment. Basically, I like to think of owning preferred stock as like having that coveted status with your favorite airline. You're no longer just another normal passenger. Nope, you are the first one on and probably the first one off the plane. You rack up tons of frequent flyer miles. You've grown accustomed to upgrades to first class. And you love the flexibility of being able to change your plans on a whim, knowing that you've got free cancellations. That sounds pretty nice, right? Well, welcome to the world of preferred stock. And joining me on today's episode to break it all down is Megan Rona. Megan is our resident VIP on the debt equity team, and she was kind enough to use her guest pass on me today so that we could have our conversation from the members lounge. We talk about all of those airline perks and what their equivalents are in the world of preferred stock, and how to steer clear of the accounting turbulence. Megan Rona, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
So Megan, I explained in the cold open, you know, that preferred stock is kind of like having status with your favorite airline. So naturally, I had to have you on the show as our, you know, resident accounting VIP. But before we get into that analogy, I think we need to make somewhat of a pre-flight announcement, right? So I wanted to ask if you could just give us a 30-second overview of what preferred stock is.
Is this where I'm supposed to say, fasten your seatbelts and secure all your luggage?
That might be fitting, yeah.
But seriously, preferred stock is a type of equity ownership, just like common stock. But as its name suggests, preferred stock investors will get preferred or preferential rights over the common shareholders. So keeping to our fun analogy, both common and preferred stockholders get a seat on the plane, but those with platinum status get extra perks as a higher tier class of traveler.
That's a perfect segue, Megan, into how I wanted to have this conversation today on preferred stock, which, you know, as you just said, usually comes with all sorts of extra bells and whistles. So I thought what we could do here is I want to throw out something that you might get if you have status with an airline, and then you can tell me what the parallel is for what you might find in a preferred stock instrument. Is that cool with you?
Sounds good.
All right. So let's start with priority boarding. What's the preferred stock equivalent of priority boarding?
So I would say with priority boarding, you know, you're the first one to get on the plane, settle into your seat, and start enjoying those in-flight services. With preferred stock, I would say this is the equivalent of having a liquidation preference. This means that if the company's liquidated, the preferred shareholders get paid before the common shareholders. So just like priority boarding, the liquidation preference in preferred stock guarantees you're at the front of the line when it comes to getting your investment back if there is a liquidation event.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, personally, I think priority boarding is a bit overrated. You know, usually I'm trying to be the last one on the plane, but being the first one to get off the plane or, you know, what you just said, get paid first in the event of liquidation is definitely something that I would pay for. So that sounds like a nice perk. All right. Let me ask you about another one that, you know, it's something that I never seem to quite have enough of, and that's frequent flyer miles.
Everyone's favorite perk with airline status. You know, who doesn't love to earn and accumulate airline miles? Well, just like when you earn airline miles each time you take a flight, I would say preferred stockholders earn dividends over time. And the best part, preferred stockholders typically have a fixed dividend, which means you know exactly how many miles you're going to be racking up. And just like some airlines let you carry forward unused miles, preferred stock dividends may be cumulative, which means that if a company does not declare a dividend in a year, the preferred dividends will continue to accumulate until such time when those dividends are declared and paid. And regardless whether your dividends are cumulative or not, they generally must be paid to preferred shareholders before any dividends are paid to common shareholders.
Got it. And that cumulative versus non-cumulative distinction is important, right? When we're thinking about the EPS impact of preferred shares. So yeah. Something that our listeners will want to make sure that they are checking their preferred stock agreements for, as it could change what you calculate EPS. All right, let's move on to another airline status perk that I have no personal experience with other than looking at the list and never seeing my name on it. And that's upgrades.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one because when you think of an upgrade in an airline, it's typically an upgrade from coach to first class. But I think as we've already established, preferred stock generally has preferential rights over common. So what is there really to upgrade to? Well, sometimes preferred stock is convertible into common stock. Now, you may be thinking, why is that an upgrade? Well, just like first class comes with more perks and luxuries, common shares often have more potential for price appreciation, and they also come with voting rights, which preferred shareholders usually don't get. So while preferred shares give you a steady, predictable return in the form of dividends, common shares can give you a chance at a bigger reward. So now, if we're offered an upgrade on an airline seat, we would likely always jump on the opportunity to take it. But if a preferred stockholder has the decision to convert, it's not so simple, as it's going to depend on the holder's investment goals and the overall economics of the deal.
Gotcha. And that usually comes down to, you know, how in the money is the conversion option versus, you know, potential dividends they might be forfeiting and those kinds of things?
Yeah, exactly. What's the, you know, long-term appreciation for the common stock is also a factor, right?
All right. Well, I have a confession to make. I did lie. I have gotten upgraded one time in my life. I had a flight out of JFK. This was like 10 years ago. They got canceled after about 8 hours of delays. and they rebooked me on a different flight that was taken off from LaGuardia that was departing in about 90 minutes. So I remember telling the taxi driver his tip would be directly correlated to how fast we made it there. And then I immediately regretted that as he proceeded to drive like a maniac, even by New York taxi standards. Anyway, we got there and I got to cross something off my personal bucket list, which was sprinting to the gate, you know, Home Alone style. And I made it just as we were boarding the last group. And after huffing and puffing my way to the gate agent, she told me I was upgraded to first class. So I feel like I earned that one, but it didn't come from having status, I can tell you that. In hindsight, I probably, you know, should have just canceled the flight, but the airline was going to charge me, you know, one of those big cancellation fees. So if I did have status, maybe I would have been able to get a free cancellation, which brings me to the next perk I wanted to ask you about. What is like the free cancellation in preferred stock arrangements?
Great question, Nick. In the world of preferred stock, the equivalent of a free cancellation is what we call redemption rights. Redemption rights allow the preferred stockholder the ability to cancel under certain conditions or get a refund on their investment. Upon a redemption, the holder essentially sells the shares back to the company. But just like in airlines, as you know, the airline can also cancel a flight. So redemption rights can also go both ways and give the company the option to buy back the preferred shares you hold. And as any experienced traveler knows, you need to understand the cancellation policy. The same can be said for redemption rights. They require a very careful analysis from an accounting perspective, as they can have a significant impact on the accounting.
And Megan, that's another perfect segue to my next question, because what I now want to talk about is the accounting preferred stock. Is this is an accounting podcast after all. And, you know, no matter how much status you have, the flight itself can still be very turbulent. And likewise, you know, in my experience, accounting for these instruments can also be a rough experience if you don't know where to look, especially with all those different features that you just walked us through. So Megan, I want to ask you to hop in the pilot's chair for a second and, you know, help navigate our listeners away from some of that choppy air. And tell us, you know, in your experience, what are the most common areas that people, you know, either struggle with or just flat out get wrong when it comes to accounting for preferred stock?
You know, this is ultimately going to depend on the specific features of the preferred stock. But in general, I'd say, you know, classification is the biggest issue you have to evaluate. You know, preferred stock can appear in, you know, three different sections of the credit side of the balance sheet. It could be a liability, it could be temporary equity classified, or it could just be in permanent equity. You know, and as I mentioned before, the redemption rights will be the key driver for that classification. You know, if the redemption rights are mandatory for both parties or unavoidable, then the preferred stock would be a liability. Or if the redemption is conditional but outside of the control of the company, that could result in temporary equity classification if the company applies the SEC's temporary equity guidance. You know, so definitely redemption features are going to be a big part of classification analysis, and the devil is usually in the details for these arrangements. And then I would say the second biggest piece of, from an accounting perspective, is analyzing the preferred stock for embedded derivatives and determining if any require separate accounting as a derivative.
Thanks. Yeah, those are two big issues. I should have told you there's no swearing on this podcast. So we don't like to use the D word, derivatives. So we might have to bleep that out in post-production. But, you know, and that's a very complex area of the accounting. So I don't want to go through, you know, the rabbit hole, but I guess I would just say, all these features that we've talked about, you know, using our airline status are things that people really need to go through and figure out if they need to, you know, separate from the preferred stock itself and account for as a derivative, you know, usually a fair value, or, you know, include in the preferred stock. And then you get to the accounting that Megan just walked us through. And I guess with that, Megan, let me ask you, can you make a quick plug about where people can go to get more information about how to navigate all this complex accounting literature?
Sure. I would first recommend the KPMG Debt and Equity Financing Handbook. I personally think it was a great handbook as I co-authored it. So I'm a little biased, but you know, it definitely is a great resource out there. There's a lot of content on preferred stock. You know, it's got its own chapter on equity. So that would definitely be my first place to start.
Well, your opinion might be biased, but mine I like to think is completely unbiased. And I think it's the best debt equity book out there. You know, as you mentioned, it's got the whole chapter on preferred stock, which goes through all the things we've talked about on this podcast, plus some others that we didn't have time to cover, like, you know, preferred stockholders could have voting rights or better yet, seats on the board. And we talk about how those features and every other feature that you might find in preferred stock impacts the accounting. Plus, we got a whole chapter on temporary equity, which, as you mentioned, is potentially highly relevant for these. We have a whole chapter on embedded derivatives and how you go through that analysis. So I'm with you. And that's something you can find on, you know, our FRV website, or you can just simply Google, you know, KPMG Debt Equity Handbook, and it should be the first thing that pops up. So with that, Megan, I want to say thank you for joining me today and using your guest pass on me. I've had a great time in the VIP lounge.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Thank you for listening. We've got plenty of new episodes coming your way. And if you like what you heard, please give us 5 stars and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And for more in-depth coverage of all your favorite accounting topics, make sure to check out our website at frv.kpmg.us.